Hey, next on the T Nation, thanks for coming back and tuning in to part two of this week's show featuring 1989 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia and one of the top instructors in our game, Rob Strano. Just like in part one, we're going to be talking all masters all the time. We're going to talk about their experiences being out there at Augusta National, being on the property, playing in the tournament, some of their favorite memories, and of course, who they like to win this week. So sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2UNDR.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is a guy who's become a wonderful friend and I enjoy immensely, and that's 1989 Open champion and four-time Ryder Cup team member, and just one of the great people you get to meet in this life, and that is Mark Calcavecchia. I want to remind you a little bit about Mark's background. He's from Laurel, Nebraska. His family moved to West Palm Beach, Florida when he was 13 years old. He won the Florida High School Golf Championship in 1977, went on to play his college golf at the University of Florida from 1978 to 1980. He was named All-SEC in 1979, and that season Mark won the Furman Invitational. He turned pro in 1981. Got his first win out on tour at the 1986 Southwest Golf Classic. Mark has one of the lowest scoring rounds to par in PGA Tour history. He finished 28 under par, a four-round total of 256 at the 2001 Waste Management Open, which featured a second round 60. At the 2009 Canadian Open, he set a record by making 9 consecutive birdies during his second round. In all, Mark won 13 times out on the PGA Tour. He won 4 more times out on the Champions Tour, and over the course of his playing career, he has 193 top 10 finishes, 351 top 25s, and he's a great follow out on Twitter, at Mark Calc, and I couldn't be more thrilled I get to have him with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Mark, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me. Always good to be on the show.
So, Mark, I understand you're out there at Augusta National. Tell me what's going on. Are you going to be in the out at the tournament and playing in the par three?
Yeah, no par three. We they did away with that like 8 years ago, I think, or 7, 8 years ago, where honorary invitees can play practice rounds in the par three and whatnot. So, no, just here watching my buddy Eric Cole, and just been out to the course the last few days, just hanging out and having a Bloody Mary or two, so it's been fun.
So I've seen you post some pictures, and I was interested because you've got one there of Brenda kind of pointing down the 10th fairway, Brenda's bunker. Tell me that story.
No, that was hysterical. So we played there one day back in 2002, I think, shortly after I met her, and now, she really didn't know any of the front nine, and she got down there and hit it right on 10, hit it in the bunker, and she kept, like, sculling it in this 3-inch lip, and it took her 4 swipes to get out, and she's all pissed off, and, you know, she kind of recognized that hole, but then once she got up on top of the hill on 11, and saw 11 green and 12 green aim at corner down there, it was awesome for her. She played the last 8 holes, 5 over. She hit 12 green with a 6 iron. So it was a pretty cool experience for her.
Yeah, I was just talking to Cookie about challenges of the back nine and Amen Corner, and he was telling me how 11 always seemed to get him every year, a couple of times making seven there. Talk about the challenge of the tee shot on 11, trying to hit that green, and then walking up to 12 tee and trying to figure out the winds and getting on that green.
Yeah, 11. I always drove it pretty good on 11 because at the time it was kind of a slight dogleg right. It's a little different now, but it kind of suited my eye. So I never had a problem with the drive, but man, the second shot is super scary. Obviously, you don't want to hit it in the pond. But then if you flame it out to the right, you've got a nearly impossible up and down. So it's just a super hard second shot. Obviously a lot longer now than it was, back when I played 20 years ago. But, and then you get over to 12, assuming you're only trying to par 11. I don't know if I birdied 11 two or three times in my 18 years that I played in the tournament. So, you get a par 11, you're ecstatic. You get over 12, and like Cookie said, you think you're downwind, and then you look over to the flag on 11, and it's blowing the other way. And you're like, oh my God, now what do I do? You don't want to come up short. Then you see guys airmail the green back in the azaleas back there, and I think it's the best par three in the world, honestly. For being 150 yards long, it's so scary because you can make anything on that hole. I've made anywhere from a 2 to a 7 there, and it's an amazing hole.
Going back to what you said a moment ago about fanning it right on 11, what makes that an impossible up and down?
Well, the green slopes right to left. So when the guys do panic and fan their shot out to the right, then you've got a straight downhill chip towards the water, especially when the pin's in the front left. When the guys hit it out to the right, you can easily chip that in the water. And it's happened many times. And then you got to either re-chip it or go to the drop area, which is on the other side of the lake. And that's no bargain either, because the grass over there is kind of sandy and like into the green, like Cookie said, and it's just it's terrifying. And then even when the pin's kind of in the back or the center left, when guys hit it out to the right, you are seriously scared of chipping it in the lake. So it's just it's an incredible hole. If you hit that green, you are ecstatic.
In 1992, you shot a back nine 29 in the final round of that Masters that included a birdie on 10, which I'm assuming you didn't hit it in Brenda's bunker. So you birdie 10,
right,
plus you birdie the last six holes in a row. Your 65 that day was by far the best round of the day. As I was looking at other scores, Craig Perry, who went into that final round with a lead, he shot 78, 70 shot right. 81. What do you remember about getting hot on that back nine?
Well, you know what? My goal at Augusta every year was to get to 18 even par. The first seven holes there terrified me. If I could get to the 18 at even par, I felt like I could shoot a good score and break par. Anyway, I shot even par that day on the front nine, and then made like a 20-footer on 10. I remember like it was yesterday. And actually hit it 10 feet on 11 and missed it, hit it 6 feet on 12 and missed it, and then birdied the last six. So, and really didn't make any big putts. I two putted 13, hit it fairly close at 14, two putted 15, hit it 10 feet at 16, a foot at 17 and a foot at 18. So it was one of those, incredibly hot stretches I had where I was just dialed in, and I seriously could have birdied every hole in the back nine.
Yeah. Would have happened, do you think, if you shoot 27?
Oh my God. I don't know. That would have been amazing, but I still remember it very well.
So 92 was obviously the year that Freddie won, and That tee shot on 12, somehow by the grace of God, stayed out of Rays Creek. Did you ever talk to Freddie about how that shot didn't fall back into Rays Creek somehow?
You know, I never really asked him about it, but, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you win a big tournament, a major or any tournament for that matter. You get a good break. You get a great break somewhere along the line. I mean, there's never been a guy who's won a PGA Tour event or a major that hasn't gotten an amazing break somewhere. And that was certainly it for Freddie, no doubt.
So fast forward to 2001. That year you finished tied for fourth behind Tiger. You shoot 66 in that second round. You go into the final round in a three-way tie with Tiger and Phil. Talk about contending there again 9 years later.
I was playing so good that year. I remember I birdied one. The pin was in that little swale on the right, which usually is on Sunday. And I made it from the right fringe. And I was just so confident. And I remember thinking kind of down, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever on the front nine. I was sure I was going to win. You know, and that's the worst thing you can do is think ahead. And I was wondering to myself, do they have a green jacket big enough to fit me? You know, on 18 after I win. And you know, it was a perfect day to play golf. There was no wind. It was beautiful. And I think I made like 2 birdies and 2 bogeys the whole day. Couldn't get anything to go in the back nine, and you know, tied for fourth. But you know, Tiger won in the end. And but yeah, I think I did myself in there a little bit by thinking ahead about the green jacket that I thought I had my right arm in 1988. So 13 years later, I'm already thinking about it.
You've talked several times about your friendship with Jack Nicklaus. Where were you when he won it in 86?
Oh my gosh. The first 2 days I was at Augusta watching Ken Green, my buddy. And he led after the first round. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. He made like 4 or 5 40 footers. He choked the second round, but made the cut. And then I got in my car and drove to Joplin, Missouri, playing the TPS Mini Tour. And I don't know where I stopped on Saturday to watch the Masters, but I do remember leaving early so I could get to the hotel in Joplin, Missouri, you know, to watch obviously the final round. And that's where I was. I don't remember if it was a Holiday Inn or what it was, but you know, when Jack did what he did, and you know, Seve hit in the water in 15, I was going crazy. I'll never forget it. What's the first thing we do when we get to 16 after we hit our tee shots into the green? We go hit about 4 skip shots apiece. And then ever since then, everybody, you know, that heard we did it or, you know, saw us on 6 or 15 green, you know, of course, then they had to try it. And, you know, it just became a tradition now that actually I think you get booed now if you don't hit one. So
yeah.
It's pretty funny.
So did they ever come back and say anything more to you on either side of the coin of, hey, we told you not to do that, or B, well, hey, that's a kind of a good idea. Maybe we should capitalize on that.
Ken got a few letters from Hort, so I think he probably yelled at him again for that. But of course, I never got a letter in my locker. And you know, Ken's like, "How come you never got yelled at?" And I said, "Because I'm a good boy. I'm a nice boy. I'm not you know, creepy like you." So I said, "Ken, you're just easier to get yelled at, evidently." So yeah, Ken, I think Ken got, over the years, about 4 or 5 letters from Hort Hardin, you know, even when he snuck people in the gate in his trunk of his Cadillac, back whatever year that was, Ken or some guy gave his badge through a hedge over on number 5 or something to some guy who hopped the fence. Ken broke the rules a little bit, more often than I did. So that's why he always got yelled at.
What? You know, you take that a step further, right? Because now they're selling merchandise with Skip It on it and that sort of thing. I mean, it has become a huge tradition. To your point, people get booed if If a guy doesn't throw a ball down and hit skip shots, right, that person gets booed mercilessly. It seems like if Ken still had the letter, you might go back to the folks at Augusta National and need a cut to the skip it apparel now.
That's what I'm thinking. We should get a little percentage of the skip it hat sales. Matter of fact, as we speak this very second, I've got my skip it hat on. And I'm going to be wearing it all week. We've hit the merchandise tent 3 days in a row. So we've got about 24 hats and who knows how many shirts. And oh, and these gnome things are huge. There's a little one and a big one, and it looks like a fat Santa dressed in some sort of golfing Augusta outfit. So, but everybody's buying those up like crazy. So it's kind of fun to do that and be in there with all the people and see what they're buying and saying. So it's really, I'm having a blast. We're going to go out to the par three, and you know, I never really enjoy playing in the par three that much because, you know, it kind of took forever and, go out there and watch Eric Cole play some holes. And four or five of our friends have already gotten up here from Tequesta that we all play golf with at Tequesta Country Club. So it'd be fun having a few beers with them and just hanging out. But yeah, really enjoying the atmosphere and you know, just being at Augusta National special.
Yeah, those gnomes, to your point, I've always sort of shook my head like, what is the craze over these gnomes? I don't get it either. But everybody has to have a gnome when they go in there.
Oh, when we ran in we were first in line again this morning at 7 a.m. And everybody, the first thing they did, they grabbed their bag, they grabbed a small gnome and a big one. And already Brenda looked online and people are trying to sell them for $400 or $500. And they cost, the big one costs 50 and the small one costs 30. It's just like some sort of fad that I don't get. So of course we're buying them.
So there's going to be one in front of both houses here pretty soon.
Oh yeah. We're buying them up. That's going to be a good Christmas present for somebody.
Indeed.
Yeah. We've done all our shopping but I think we're going to go back in tomorrow morning as well and buy some more stuff. It's just, you know, it's the coolest merchandise tent. Well, it's not a tent. It's obviously a really nice building, but it's just the stuff they have in there is incredible.
Yeah, it is. And I tell you, there is the secondhand market on this stuff, to your point about those things going for $400 or $500 a piece. But it's always amazing to me, the people walking out of there with just bag after bag after bag loaded down with stuff because it's all over eBay 5 minutes later.
Right. I saw a guy carrying like four bags in each hand that were just stuffed to the max. And when you go in there, it's not a shopping cart or like a basket or something, but they have these green bags. And one guy had four of them in his hand, two in each hand, and they were stuffed. I'm like, that had to be like $5,000 worth of stuff that guy alone bought. So it's pretty amazing. It's a crazy atmosphere.
Indeed. So looking back over the course of all the times that you played there and obviously all the times you watched the tournament, what are some of your favorite memories?
You know, I've had a lot of good memories there. Obviously the 29 on the back nine, watching Jack win from the little hotel that I was in and Joplin, Missouri, 86. Great memory. Tiger's chip on 16, whatever year that was. Vern Lundquist call with Jack. All kinds of, there's just so many great Masters memories that you think about over the years, it's probably without a doubt, other than the Ryder Cup, my favorite tournament to watch on TV. And you know, all the years I played in this tournament, 18 years I think, and we're here this week, and as I walk the grounds and look around, you know, when you play, I don't think you fully appreciate what everything means here, what it's like, what the people think. You know, I hear all the fans and the patrons or whatever they're called, you know, the comments they make. It's just amazing how in awe everyone is of this place and the players that play here. So to be a part of that for 18 years was really cool.
What's it like for you now? I mean, I imagine if anybody knew the guy standing next to them is Mark Calcavecchia, they'd go crazy. But what's it like being in and around the patrons, just sort of absorbing the golf course and the tournament kind of through their eyes?
You know, these fans are incredibly knowledgeable, and a lot of them do know who I am. I've signed 100 autographs. I've taken 100 pictures. I've talked to 100 people just in the 2 days I've been here. They're like, Mark Calcavecchia, can I take a picture? And they talk to me and ask me questions. And, you know, I just stand around the putting green or the first tee or the 10th tee or whatever. And I've ran into so many people I know. I talked to a guy I played in the Senior Open with at Inverness in 2011. I talked to a guy that is a fan of my wife's, of Brenda, because of Twitter and her real estate. He wants to buy a house in Highlands. I mean, you run into so many people. I talked to Buddy Alexander, the golf coach in Florida, former U.S. Amateur champion. Just Ian Wisdom. I mean, all the past champions are here. It's just unbelievable how many people you run into that you know. And it's been very fun.
Let's take that a step further, because it's clear when people recognize you and they're asking for autographs and all of that sort of thing, that you've brought a lot of joy to people watching you, the style of play that you had. You were always a go for it kind of guy. You weren't a layup sort of guy. You brought a lot of excitement to the game. You brought a lot of joy to people that got to watch you through the game. That's got to be kind of fulfilling for you to hear and see them appreciate the player that you've always been.
Yeah, it's been very cool. And you know what? I asked Brenda today, because, you know, you wear your ID here because you got to have your ID on everywhere you go here. I said, do you think all these people are recognizing me because they recognize me or because my name tag says Mark Calcavecchia on it? And she says, I think they recognize you because of who you are. And I think that's 100% true. Everyone's been so nice here. All the people working the tournament, you know, good morning, you know, have a great day. And you know, all the people, all the fans that are here, and so many of them had said hi. And again, it's been really cool. And not that I'm looking for that, but it's nice to be acknowledged and people have wanted to take pictures with me and, oh my God, you're Mark Calcavecchia, whatever. So it's been kind of cool. Seems how that I'm on the, you know, downside of my career, almost 64 years old. But it's been so cool being here. And, you know, we're going to be here another 4 or 5 days.
Mark, just a couple more before I let you go. And you're one of only 23 players who have made 1,000 starts out there on tour. Talk about your longevity in the game and to be able to have a record like that.
Yeah, that's a lot of starts, no doubt. And it's, you know, when I think about how many, 31 Open Championships. I mean, how can you imagine flying, you know, across to Europe 31 times? Not to mention all the times I flew to Italy or, you know, Ireland or other tournaments I played over in Europe. It's just amazing how fast it's gone by. You know, I think my swing, for the most part, has been fairly simple and fairly reliable, where I never got too far off track. So even when I wasn't swinging great, I could manage my game, and I think that was probably one of the best keys to my longevity.
You had both knees replaced recently, but you got back out there and you've been competing on the Champions Tour. Are we going to get to see you here in Atlanta in a few weeks at the Mitsubishi Electric Classic?
You know, I'm actually not going to play Atlanta. I just withdrew a few weeks ago. We got a few things going on. We're going to head down. We've been in Highlands, North Carolina, which is our summer home, and we're going to head down to Florida for a few weeks. But I do enjoy that tournament, and I'm just not going to make it this year. Houston's my next tournament. I'm hitting the ball fine. I've actually getting a little bit of distance back after my back surgery and knee surgeries, but the only thing I'm missing right now at my age is consistency. You know, I hit some great shots, and then all of a sudden I'll hit a 5 iron 40 yards right or something super weird. So it's just, you know, it's part of old age. You know, other than Bernhard Langer, not many guys are playing after 64 years of age. So, but I still love to play. I love to play at home. We're here at the Masters watching my buddy Eric Cole. We play a lot at home at Cuesta. And, you know, that's part of the reason we're here. But, yeah, I still love to play. And I'm going to play probably 10 to 12 tournaments this year and same next year and just kind of see what happens. And if it doesn't go great, just kind of, you know, it's been a great ride.
Mark, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with you and follow you and Brenda on social media?
Brenda just raised her arm in the air. So I'm at Mark Kalk on Twitter, and Brenda's at Brenda Kalk. And what are you on Instagram? Same thing. Brenda Kalk. Brenda Kalk and Mark Kalk. You can find us. And obviously, my wife, by far the funniest duo of us two. yeah, she's the best.
Indeed, she is. Well, Mark, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend, as is your wife, Brenda. I look forward to catching up with hopefully both of you again very soon.
Absolutely, Chris. Anytime.
Take care, Mark. All the best to you, you and Brenda. We'll catch up soon.
You got it. Thank you.
See ya. That is the great Mark Calcavecchia, folks. Boy, I tell you, and Brenda is hilarious. She is just fantastic at Brenda Calc. If you're not following her and Mark at Mark Calc, you're missing out on two fantastic individuals and some very witty comments and that sort of thing. Just two wonderful individuals. And I've had the privilege of having Brenda on the show a couple of times. We did a girls' night out episode last year with she and Susie Whaley and a couple of others. And I'm certainly looking forward, hopefully getting that opportunity again a little bit later on in this summer. But Mark was a great player. There's no question. And coming off of back surgery and double knee replacement, getting that swing back. But you want to talk about a guy who has just brought us all so much joy in watching him play. His style of play, and just the guy he is. You marry all that together, and that is just a wonderful package of a guy that you appreciate watching play the game of golf. And you know the kind of jovial guy he is off the course. That's a guy you want to root for. And you certainly want to see at this, whether he's 64 years of age or not, out there on the Champions Tour, you want a guy like that as an ambassador to your game. And as I said to him earlier, it's got to be fulfilling for him to see the fan love and appreciation that they have for him. And it's sort of a thank you, I think, from the patrons at Augusta National and for golf fans everywhere, no matter what tournament he's playing in, to be able to come up to a guy like Mark and shake his hand and get his autograph because you appreciate what he did for you as a fan of the game for the decades that he's been out there playing. I know that that's the sentiment I feel, and I think that's the sentiment he's starting to feel out there at Augusta National. Two great people. Looking forward to catching up with both of them again soon. Coming up next is not only one of the top instructors in our game and the host of the Golf Kingdom TV show, which you guys, please go out on YouTube and click the subscribe button when you search for the Golf Kingdom, because it's such a wonderful show. And Rob Strano, who's coming up next, does an outstanding job hosting that show. Before I bring Rob into the show, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speed Bolt at squares.com. That's SQAIRZ.com.
Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join me, LPGA Pro and golf mindset expert, Debbie O'Connell, for my Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cuts 6 strokes, and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
All right, now back and making his 20th appearance with me here on the show as one of the all-time great instructors in our game, plus the host of the Golf Kingdom TV show, and that's Rob Strano. You guys can watch the Golf Kingdom out there on Amazon Fire TV, Blab TV, Roku, and of course on Rob's YouTube channel as well. You can go get a lesson from Rob down in Destin, Florida at the Strano Golf Academy. He is a wonderful friend and one of my favorite Goombas, and I can't be more excited he's back with me again this week. Here on Next Down the Tee. Hey, Rob, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Chris. Great to be on the show again. And I just question where my brain is tonight, because as you're introducing me, I started to fix my hair like I'm on TV or something. this could go anywhere. So buckle up tight, everybody. Here we go.
Yes, indeed. And happy Masters Week, my friend. Is there a better time of year than this week?
No, I actually think when they wrote the song for Christmas, it's the most wonderful time of the year. They actually messed up. It should have been for Masters Week, but we can work on some sort of a write-in campaign to get that switched over. But I think it applies more to Masters Week. And, you know, hello, friends. Here we go.
Indeed. Rob, we've got the Champions Dinner going on as we speak. Before we get into who we like this week, let's talk some history, because you grew up at the same country club as 1968 Masters champion Bob Golby, who won that tournament due to some unfortunate circumstances. And for those who don't know, Mr. Golby birdied 13 and 14, then eagled 15 and went on to shoot 66 to theoretically tie Roberto DiVincenzo. And it looked like the two of them were headed into a playoff the next day, because back then it was an 18-hole playoff. DiVincenzo had birdied 17 after a great approach shot to 2 feet. He knocks that birdie putt in, but unfortunately his playing partner, Tommy Aaron, wrote down a 4 on his scorecard instead of a 3. DiVincenzo would go on and sign that incorrect scorecard, and according to USGA rules, if you sign the card, the higher score stands. So he ended up losing by a stroke. Rob, I'm guessing you heard that story a time or two from Mr. Golby. What did he say about what transpired?
What's interesting is when he had the 50th anniversary of the win, I called him that day. And whenever I was home, we'd have lunch together and talk golf. And then we'd talk on the phone periodically. And that morning I called him and just said, you know, congratulations on the 50th anniversary of your win, big win. And, you know, he handled it so fantastically, you know, and you can go to YouTube and see the telecast. And I've heard his nephew, Jay Haas, who also grew up at St. Clair, talk about how graciously handled things, because, you know, they pulled him in post-run interview. He's there, you know, all this is going on, and just handled it so well, you know, in the moment. But what's interesting about that whole day is what went on early, early, early in that round. And we kind of, that day I talked to him after the, you know, being 50 years, he remembered every shot. And what's funny is he told me on number 2, he had about a 4 or 5 footer and he missed it. So he had a chance to get going early and he missed a birdie putt right there. And DiVincenzo, of course, had made 2 on the first hole. He made eagle on 1. So Mr. Golby gets up there in 2, misses a shorty, but pars 3 and 4. And he gets up on 5, hits a tee shot down the middle. He's got that hanging lie in 5 fairway and the flags on that front right plateau, which you can't get to. And he's got a 5 iron into that green. And of course, you're just trying to hit it solid. And he said, he caught it a shade thin. And he said those little thin shots, you know, will kind of come off a little bit kind of to the right. And he said he caught it a shade thin and it hit and it skipped in there about 5 feet on the 5th hole. And he said, you know, it was a great, great break early in the round. You know, the shot what could have been back in the back part of the green, but it just caught the top of the ridge and went in there about 5 feet. And he said this thing broke like 3 cups. And he got in there and really put his head down and he made it. He said it really got him going, because he made a couple more birdies when he made the turn. And of course, you know, he was telling me he hadn't had a three putt until he three putted 17. So on 18, he hits the right trees and it comes back and he hits one of the greatest long irons in 18 around the corner up on the upper plateau. And he's coming down the plateau and he hits it about 5-6 feet left of the cup. And to hear him talk about what was going through his head, and you know, John Cook was on earlier talking about, you know, having the players as broadcasters telling you what's going on in our bodies when we play. And I can relate to what Cookie said about under pressure with everything on the line. You know, you can feel your pulse in your eyeballs. You can't spit. You're trying to control your bowels. Your hands are shaking. There's a whole lot going on as you're trying to knock a golf ball in a golf hole or hit a golf shot. And he said he was really nervous over the putt. And as he was getting ready to get into it, he kind of started to have a really tough conversation. He said, you know, you choking dog, get in there and be a man. Man up and make this putt. And he got in there and he put it right in the middle. And I've got a picture in my office here that has him making that putt and it's signed. I have a signed scorecard. I have a signed actual final round starting time sheet from that final round. So it's kind of a, you know, homage to his Masters win. But just to hear him talk about the moments in that round from being a past player, you know, that he knew I was a former tour player, you know, growing up with him at the club and, you know, gave up my all for 15 years. But to have him walk through some of those key moments that are kind of obscured, it's fun to look back on and hold in my memory.
No doubt. And speaking of, you know, looking back on great Masters memories, and you and I are roughly the same age. I think you're a few years younger than I am. So you don't remember watching Mr. Golby win that tournament. But what are some of the wins or some of the other moments in Masters history that you enjoy looking back on at this time of year?
Oh, that I look back on. Well, I mean, I thought about it when you were talking to Calc about the year I thought he was going to win, when Sandy Lyle picked that bunker shot on 18 from just dead. And what's funny is, you know, I always say, athletes can see through the eyes of other athletes. You know, Nicklaus sees through Palmer. Palmer sees through Irwin. Irwin sees through Watson. Watson sees through Tiger. So we can all see through each other's eyes. And I can, in my mind's eye, see him standing there. And I can see looking over at that bunker on 18 and just seeing Lyle down in there going, this guy's got nothing. I mean, he's got nothing in there. And all of a sudden, this ball comes out clean, and you go, oh, you got to be kidding. And I can see it, you know, going up high, coming down, spinning back down the hill, and you're going, are you kidding me? Did that just happen? You know, I think about that one, having, you know, you just had Mark on there talking about it. But there have been so many great moments. You know, he alluded to the Tiger chipping at 16. That was a great moment. But if you remember, he bogeyed 17 and 18 to go into the playoff with DeMarco in that one. But great memories and moments. I'm trying to be obscure here. Things that I think about all the time when I think about, you know, Augusta. You know, I think about the year Len Matisse was in the playoff and got beat. I think it was by Mike Weir.
Right.
And Len was a contemporary of mine. We had played on tour together. I'd played with him. And just, you know, having a guy that you knew that was kind of one of those journeymen. That's going, you know, he was kind of like Mike Donald to Hale Irwin. And, you know, it's like, oh, come on, come on. And you're just kind of at the end, you're so deflated. You're like, oh my gosh. You know, you're rooting for someone that hard to win it. But there, you know, each event has its own set of memories, which is what makes, you know, the Masters so unique, that we could sit and go through this thing tournament by tournament by tournament and come up with something great.
We've talked over the years, and I was privileged enough to see you out at Augusta National, walk a little bit of the course with you. You introduced me to Mr. Golby, which is obviously a huge thrill for me. But as we've talked about over the years, the golf tournament is obviously our favorite piece of the golf season. But for folks that have never had an opportunity to go out there and walk those grounds and be on that golf course, we've watched it over the years. We think we're familiar with the golf course, but to me, you just don't get the sense that you need of what Augusta National is like unless you've actually had the privilege of walking that golf course. Talk about how different it is.
Well, it's just, well, it's one of those courses where each hole is a stadium unto itself. And you don't get the sense that it's it's 18 holes. You get a sense that it's one hole 18 times. And it's, and you've seen them all. You know the history on each hole. So it's almost like you're at Wrigley Field on one hole. Then you're going to Fenway. Then you go to Busch Stadium in St. Louis. Then you're at another, you know, another cathedral or shrine. So, you know, as you walk the course, you know, the, you just kind of want to stay in one hole and absorb it. And, I always think about when I think about the course, one of the most unheralded spots on the golf course is just standing to the right of the ninth green, right at the middle of the length of that green and looking back up the curve of nine fairway, looking at the contour of nine green over your shoulder at 18. And, you know, and you're looking back down the hill and just to your left. But most people don't realize that big open area used to be the practice area. And it's just this big wide open expanse right there that they've regraded it a little bit. There used to actually be a practice tee there. And this was, I'm talking back in my first year was in 1978 when I went there. And, you know, there used to be still a little practice tee there. So to stand in that spot and kind of absorb it is one of my favorite spots, you know, at the golf course. It's kind of a different one. But then, you know, you take in the fifth green and the 14th green, which are almost brother and sister greens with the huge false fronts and the little upper plateau edge with all the movement. And you look down into the sixth hole. It's like you're hitting into, I always say, it's like you're hitting into a crayon box. One of my memories as a tour player is the TPC Avenal where I played my first PGA Tour event. The old ninth hole used to play downhill like that one to a narrow green with the lake on the right. And in my first round, I played late and the whole amphitheater was full of different colored shirts. I could still see it. And it was like, I always say it was like hitting it down into a crayon box. And it's just such a cool visual in my head. And that's a great visual there. But there's just so many great spots that as you walk around, you just, it, the whole place just comes alive and it just etches itself deeply in your memory.
Going back to what you said a moment ago, because I think another thing that people don't get a sense of, and we've talked about the elevation changes and all of that sort of thing, is the undulations on the greens. You mentioned the false fronts. Five's got a huge false front. Four's got a huge false front. There's a lot of false fronts on here. And then if you get it onto the greens, the way that the undulations are and the breaks and everything that is so subtle that you've really got to know what's going on these greens. I mean, to me, that's just another piece. We know that putting these greens is something that none of us will ever experience unless we, you know, get graced by God to go get invited by a member to go play out there. But if you walk around and you take a look at what these greens are like, you walk around them and see all of these undulations, boy, as Tom Patria talked at the beginning of the show, where guys telling him, Ken Venturi told him, you know, I could put you on every green in regulation. If I got to decide where the ball was, you still wouldn't break 90. I think that's the thing that we also don't get a sense for is how difficult these greens are and the huge undulations that they have.
Yeah, it's the old saying, TV tends to flatten things out a lot. And that's really true there. And it's fun to see. And it's also makes you understand when you go to these other courses and they put these undulations in and you look at these courses and you go, no, you're not Augusta. This doesn't work here in, you know, Virginia, you know, or wherever you want to say, you know, I'm from St. Louis, you know, you can't introduce that in that area. You know, everybody tries to replicate the Augusta experience, but they're not able to because of the big, broad shoulders of the entire golf course. Most golf courses don't have that expanse where you can come at things from different angles. And, you know, I'm one of the players that's really steeped in the traditions of the game. And the one tradition I wish they'd go to is the one cut. Just go back to mowing everything one level and let everybody have the different angles to play from into these greens. Because the greens themselves are so, so difficult that, you know, I love the big parkland look of the course with the ability. And they, of course, they planted so many trees that the avenues are different now than they were 40 years ago. You know, like right on 11, used to be able to hit it right on 11 over there and come into that green from that angle, which to me is is just an awful angle to come into the green because the water is to your left, you know, and so you tug it a little bit, it's going to catch the slope and go right into the water. So it's just, you know, you get some angles that you don't get anymore because of what they've done. And it's just so cool to be able to walk around, look at things and go, you know, this player was here, that player was there, and see where they were because of the big broad shoulders of the course. But the greens themselves, when you get a chance to look at them and watch the guys in practice rounds, which is what I like to go. I don't like to go during tournament week or not the tournament rounds, just because I'm a past player and it just drives me crazy to watch guys, you know, compete, you know, when you want to go, oh, come on, give me the club. Let me show you how to do that. but to watch them hit putts on the greens and watch the balls move, you know, you really get an appreciation for what's going on there because there's a lot going on.
Tiger is obviously in the field this week. Where is the bar set for him in your eyes? He's trying to set the record for the most consecutive cuts made for tournaments entered there. He's currently tied with Fred Couples and Gary Player for that mark. Is the bar still winning? I know in his eyes, the bar is still winning. Where's the bar for you looking at Tiger now?
You know, I really don't know. I've kind of given up on Tiger prognostication because you just don't know with the guy where anything is with his game. And, you know, I think, it's unbelievable to say, you know, making the cut would be a great accomplishment. I personally think a top 25 would be awesome. And I think it would generate a ton of buzz for the tournament week. But you just don't know. He's got no competitive rounds under his belt. You know, not that that really matters in his brain because he believes, like all tour players believe, that when the switch comes on, the switch comes on and away we go. So, you know, good luck guessing on that. I certainly wouldn't put a Vegas bet on any of it.
Speaking of expectations, Rob, this is the one leg of the career Grand Slam that continues to elude Rory. Every year we keep hoping he's going to get it done. There's only been five players to complete the career Grand Slam. And for those who may not know, it's Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Ben Hogan, Gene Sarazen, and Tiger Woods. I talked to Gary Player the other day. He thinks this is the year that Rory gets it done. Do you like Rory's chances this week?
No.
Why?
I just don't think there's any form there right now. I just don't see anything that leads me to think he's going to all of a sudden get going. I mean, the putter continues to be a little bulky, and I think there's other guys that are playing better. I think it's a simple formula there. We've got some past history, and you know, with his game, other than the good final round, was it 2 years ago? I think there's other players I like.
All right. So I want to get to who those players are, but before we do that, I've asked everybody else this question tonight. I want to get your thoughts. Scottie Scheffler, if he were to win this week, second time in 3 years, he would have been a Masters champion.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first player ever to go back to back at the Players Championship.
Mm-hmm.
It would be his ninth career win. He finished second last year in the PGA, third in the US Open. Is it time for us to start thinking about Scottie? And I get everybody's thoughts about you got to do it for a long period of time. You can't just be a 2 or 3 or 4 year wonder. But is it time for us to start recognizing that maybe we're seeing the next guy? You know, Ben Hogan handed the baton to Jack. Jack handed it to Tiger. Could we be seeing the next guy that gets the baton from Tiger?
You certainly could be. I mean, his ball striking is impeccable. He's been working with Phil Kenyon on his putting, which Phil's known to be a great putting coach and can get players putting well. And, you know, he's had players win majors. And so he's got a good guy in his ear in that regard. You know, Kenyon's got, you know, has been to Augusta quite a bit working with players. So it's not an unusual spot for him. I don't discount that at all. I think he has the pedigree. He has the look, you know, renowned to be one of the best guys out there in the locker room, on the course with the fans. So I think so. And he's on the short list. You know, Augusta has a very short list of people that can win, you know, because it's A, number one, a small field, B, because the amateurs take up a bunch of places, C, because the past champions have a bunch of places. And then the golf course just eliminates a lot of guys. And it's just in their head or it doesn't fit. You know, it comes down to a handful of 10 or 15 guys that have a good chance to win this. And that's where I get to my two choices, which basically add up to the number 15.
Okay. Who is it?
X and V, 15.
Is that right?
Yep.
Tell me about the V one, because if it's Victor Hovland, I've been shaking my head about him over the last few months.
Yeah, Victor Hovland and Schauffele.
Yep.
Schauffele, so I think he's been there. Hovland's my dark horse. You know, I always pick someone I like, and then I pick a dark horse. I'm going Schauffele, and then Hovland is my dark horse.
So why? I'm the guy that just won the Tour Championship last year. I'm not sure it can qualify as a dark horse. Why is he a dark horse in your eyes?
Just like you said, he's just been a little bit, you know, kind of up and down. So that's just it. I mean, there's nobody in the field that's really a dark horse. I mean, everybody's there because they've earned it, and they're the top players on the planet. So it's just a guy who's not, you know, being talked about a lot, and it's just kind of a guy. I look at the pairings and going, you know, you look at that middle grouping of pairings, group 14 and 15. What's 13? Yeah, right in that zone right there, you've got pairings where you've got 11, 12, 13, and 14 on the pairing sheet. That's a pretty strong little section of players where you've got, you know, Cantley's in group 11. Then you come up with Matsuyama, Zalatoris, Thomas, Fitzpatrick, Rahm, Scheffler, McIlroy, Schauffele, Hovland. Those are all in that chunk right there. And, you know, I like that whole group of players right there.
So let me ask you about one of those that you just mentioned, Justin Thomas. Love Justin Thomas. Huge JT fan. Yep. Would love to see him win a green jacket. Seems odd that he and Bones would, you know, go their separate ways, split up right before the Masters. That seems like a tough thing to now go in with a different caddy, a different voice heading into Augusta. Does that strike you as odd at all?
No, not at all. Tour players are known for doing odd, strange, ridiculous things that make absolutely no sense for any reason whatsoever. Trust me, I was one. I once changed irons right before the first round of a tournament playing well.
Wow. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. I still question my sanity at the moment.
Sounded like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Missed the cut. Thank you. Don't know.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, once again, it doesn't necessarily make sense, but as players, you know, you're always looking for something to change it up. And we rarely, you know, look at ourselves as the thing needing to be changed up sometimes. It's like the movie. What was the ice skating movie? It was not Blades of Glory. But I can't think of what it was. It was a one with the male and female couple skating, and they were looking for a male partner for her. She was supposed to be the star, and it turned out she was the problem. And the guy they picked looked at the dad, who was kind of instrumental in the whole thing, and said, "You're looking for a go-to guy. Maybe you should have found a go-to girl first." Kind of same thing with players here. It's like, we're looking for a guy on the bag. Maybe we need to be the guy hitting the shots first.
Indeed. Rob, for our listeners, catch us up. What's been going on with you over on the Golf Kingdom? New season.
New season, season six of the Golf Kingdom. We've got our own YouTube channel we've started. So type in the Golf Kingdom. 84th show, third one from season six is up there. We air live along the Gulf Coast from where I live here in Destin, Florida, all the way into the Mississippi, lower Gulf Coast there. So we're all live across the lower part of the country here. So it just continues to be fun to bring, you know, the golfers down here and the golfers on YouTube. Anybody wants to catch the show, some fun stuff to help the game, some guests periodically.
Including Mark Calcavecchia.
Blast to do.
Yeah, you had Mark Calcavecchia on last season.
Yeah, we had CalCon. I keep waiting for Augusta to come up with the calc treat like he told me about that you and him enjoy.
Indeed, you would think they would have that at a concession stand.
I don't know why not.
Neither do I.
Bestseller.
And for people that don't know, remind them, what is it?
No, tell them what it is. Go ahead.
Oh, you got to get your it's lunch meat, right? Whether it's, you know, for me, it's simply salami, either ham or salami or as you know, Italians, right? Gabagool. You get a little gabagool there. Get a little provolone cheese, and you wrap it around. He wraps it around the pickle. This is his midnight snack kind of thing. So for me, I the pickle's good. I think, you know, something like a pepperoncini pepper to me is better. So that's what I do. Uh-huh. Wrap those three things together, put it around a pepperoncini pepper. That's fantastic.
There you go. Midnight snack, and then Cal chases it with a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I can't go the pepper route on that.
Wrong kind of pepper.
Exactly. Rob, yeah, for everybody else.
Everything's good. The Academy's busy.
Yeah, tell us.
TV show. All our players are getting better. We, you know, I just got a couple of texts from parents tonight. We have middle school golf here in Florida, and our middle school golfers are tearing it up. I've got the best 13-year-old for 300 miles. We can't find anybody that can beat him. The Florida golf coach said, when I was talking to him, he said, "Who's that? You know, what's this kid's name?" And I told him, his eyes kind of twinkled. He's like, "I'll be keeping an eye on that name now." So, everything's good. I couldn't be any happier with the way our players are going and how things are at the Academy. And my staff coach, Lori Ansone, who played the LPGA Tour, she's doing great. And Courtney Weber, our TPI level 3 coach, has just got our players in unbelievable shape. And the ones that are trying to get a little more mobility out there that are a little more veteran nature, boy, she's making great strides with them. She is a blessing to have and, you know, just so fortunate to have great partners in my academy that make it a great destination for players to come and get better from all over the country. I just had a father bring his kids from Alaska to see me.
Wow. Is that right?
Yep.
Fantastic. And shout out to Courtney Weber. You introduced me to her during the PGA merchandise show. She's a part of your crew. You guys were down there together doing some presentations and whatnot. And she is awesome.
Yeah, she's top notch at what she does. She's very serious. She's got a very fun, playful side to her. And you know, I brought her in. I thought at least either her or Laura would, you know, take a little bit of a more liking to me, and I'd have a good, you know, compadre there. Well, they both united against me, and I get no quarter, you know, in my own academy. They are way too much fun, and they have fun at my expense.
No doubt they do. Rob, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show for a 20th time, my friend. You're always a treat and, as you know, one of my favorite people on the planet. So thank you so very much for all you've meant to me, to meant to this show, and to our listeners. You're just one of the great people that you get to meet in this life.
Well, thank you for that compliment, and the same to you. You do such a great job with the show and all the guests, and are so knowledgeable, and you just do your work and behind the scenes and get us the right questions, and away we go. And I just appreciate it and just can't believe it's 20 times. Holy smokes.
I know it. Take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
You bet. Same there. Everybody enjoy your Masters week, friends.
There you go. That is the great Rob Strano, folks. And again, just one of the great individuals that you get the privilege of meeting in the course of this game. I can't believe that, and to be honest, I don't remember how Rob and I first got introduced to one another, but I do remember the 20 times that he has been a part of this show and made it better each and every time. And if you're not already subscribed to the Golf Kingdom out on YouTube, or you're not subscribed in whatever, whether it's Amazon Fire, Blab TV, or on Roku, you need to go out there and do it. Like, look, Rob does such a wonderful job on that show, making the game infinitely more fun, relatable, and the tips that he gives you are just outstanding. Whether it's things from around the house that he tells you how to utilize to make your swing better, or it's the information and the way that he presents that information to you on the video, or just, you know, through the course of the TV show, it's just second to none. And he makes it so much fun. That's the thing. Rob's show is more like a variety show, and a lot of times It's a variety show, a one-man variety show, because he's dressing up as different characters and in different costumes and all that sort of stuff. But he makes it fun to watch the show. So you enjoy it just as a TV show. And along the way, you got a lot better and a lot more tips to understand how to make your game, whether lower your scores or make it more fun when you're out there playing with your buddies or whatever it is. So kudos to Rob for doing something that is new and different and fresh when it comes to golf instruction on TV or on video on YouTube. He's just, like I say, he's a special person, and I can't thank him enough for being a part of the show. And I'm sure we'll get him back on the show again a little bit later on this summer. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again, going back to part one, to Tom Patry and John Cook, and here in part two to Mark Calcavecchia and Rob Strano for being a wonderful part of this week's show. Next week, we're going to recap the Masters with some of my all-time favorite guests. Scheduled to join me are 2011 U.S. Senior Open champion Olin Brown, the host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, always a treat to have John as part of the show, 1983 PGA champion and two-time Players champion Hal Sutton will be back, and a guy who finished in the top 10 in all four majors in the mid to late 90s and is now one of the best golf analysts of all time, Frank Nobilo, will be here as well. So it's going to be a great show, folks. I hope you'll come back and join us and be a part of it. You can find the show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. But in particular, we're out there on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review site. Just go to triblive.com and click on sports. You're going to find this week's episode right there, front and center for you on the homepage of the sports section. If you continue on and just click on podcasts, then you're going to be able to listen to any one of the episodes from this season. You can also find this show on great sites like Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audio Boom, and Player.fm. And as always, my sincere thanks to go out to the folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But as I say every week, my sincere thanks to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.